for a fireside chat is not only are we moving the time, but we're going to have kind of an open discussion type deal with two gentlemen that you already know, Dean Smith and Dr. Barber, and they will be speaking to the area of the counseling service that's provided to all of us here at the seminary, and also Dean Smith will help us understand a little more of the certification process. This is a time if you have any questions about what it takes to make it through here, it'd be, I guess that's a general way of stating it, but it's a good opportunity to ask both these gentlemen for any of the questions you might have on your mind. And with that, I will let you two present what you've come to talk about.
Okay. It's quite an honor to be here to address such an august student body as this. My wife was very concerned about me. She always is. She wanted to make sure that both my socks matched, so I was running a little bit late this morning. It's kind of embarrassing. She put bears on all the colors, you know, that's probably neither here nor there. I've been asked to come and talk to you just briefly about the counseling and how it works. The survey that went out recently, actually that came back recently, that went out, well, it was in the late 50s, I think. But when it came back, there was a wide disparity of information regarding how the counseling works here, what it is, and what your involvement, what my involvement is. I would like to say up front that it is the unwritten policy between Dean Smith and I. And don't you love watching Dean Smith walk across campus and kind of throw his hair back? That's one of those... it is our unwritten policy because it is our understanding that when anyone begins an academic program that is as important as this one and as academically trying as this one, anyone who goes into a graduate-type program will experience the kinds of issues that we experience here. What we experience here is not unique necessarily, but it certainly doesn't feel very good. We are of the belief and understanding that when you come here, if you bring a family, you have a set of circumstances that are different than the way it was 20, 25 years ago when you came here and you were single. We understand that you move your family, was it four times? If you have children, they are moved in and out of several different school districts. Even while you are here, you may be relocated due to Clayton zoning rules or whatever the heck is going on. And we understand that that causes stress. And we watch a lot of families come in here who are perfectly normal human beings when they hit this campus. For the 4 years that they are here, they encounter some major changes in the way they communicate with each other. They throw things where they didn't before, things like that. And when they leave here, because the parish is very different, in spite of what people will tell you here, in the parish people love you. In the parish people want you to love them. Here, you want professors to love you. It's kind of a very different hierarchical situation. Power is rearranged. And it is different to take your family into the parish. But when you're here, it is a stressful event. Your life is different for those of you with families. If you are single, it is a stressful event because people are telling you what you're going to do with your time, where you're going to live, what temperature your room is going to be, all kinds of little nuances that add stress. We understand that, and it is our belief and our unwritten policy that if you have an issue and you're willing to deal with that issue, if there are any stars that are placed, it would be on that file. There are some misconceptions about files and what information is kept and so forth. You have before you a statement of confidentiality. And if you don't, No, I'm just kidding around. We got all kinds of extras here if you need some more. Also, you should have a 4-year release of information. Release and authorization, it is referred to. These are official documents. Let me do the release and authorization first. The way it works at the counseling center is that if Dean Smith says that you have to come and see me, we are in a process where you are being evaluated, and that can happen under a number of different circumstances. If you're being evaluated, just as if you worked at Monsanto and your boss said you got to go see a counselor and I expect a report back from him, you'll have to sign a similar. This is a standard kind of thing with names. This is a standard form where you get the name has a blank. And from AAMFT forms. Now, if you have to come, there will be a report that is given back to Dean Smith. That's the way it is at all schools. If, however, you come to me, and that's what this other thing is about, see, I get to work with Dean Smith, so I guess I'm at an advantage. I've learned to respect his willingness to maintain privacy. Let me tell you this. This is stuff that don't tell anybody when you leave here. A year ago, 2 years ago, when was it? Before the policy that there could be confidentiality, the policy was is that to receive counseling, you had to go through the Dean of Student Life, and I think the nurse, and there was some other entity, perhaps a physician, and they had to refer you. And there was open communication between, it was stated up front. It's in writing. All this stuff was in writing. Someone would come in and say, I want counseling. Have you seen Dean Smith? No. Well, you got to go see him first. Okay. So they didn't come back. We set up an appointment. Now, what the students don't know, you probably knew that he is my direct boss, by the way, that when we would meet once a week, and he would say something very intrusive like, is there anything I need to know? I mean, is there any information like this that will affect a student's academic work here? And I would say yes or no. And he would say, okay. Now, what people assume that we're talking about is every little nuance of your life, every time you go down to, we are aware, by the way, I want you to know, every time you go into a bar or every beer that you drink, we have this little buzzer that goes off with your name. But there's some paranoia about that kind of thing. I took a tape recorder into the snack bar one time because I dictate my notes, both my private practice and here, and someone stopped me later and asked if I was recording the conversation that was next to me. And gosh, I wish I had the time. I'm sure it would be interesting, but we really don't. Dean Smith is going to talk to you about certification, but I need to tell you this. The way it works now, and we're going to open this up. I'm not supposed to even talk this long. We're going to open this up for questions. But the way it works, I'm sorry? Oh, I thought you had a question. The way it works is this. If you have an issue that you wish to discuss with someone professionally, you have several options. One is you're welcome, and we encourage you to go off campus. But that means you end up paying for it on your own. There's care and counseling, the Lutheran Family and Children's, that is kind of hit or miss with the therapist that you get. St. Mary's, I understand, has seen some of you for as little as $8 a session, and I'm sure they're very fine therapists there. We encourage you to deal with whatever issue you have. You're welcome to call Rose, who is my secretary, who is a very private individual, by the way, and she will establish for you an appointment. Now, the problem is that my appointments, I'm contracted to work a third of my time in the counseling area. That means that breaks down to like 13 hours. It ends up being more than that. But at the end of 13 hours, my week contractually is done. I'm supposed to spend two-thirds of other professor stuff. Really important things. I read. So I don't get a lot of chance to do that because what happens contractually and what the needs are at the moment are sometimes very different. So you call Rose, she sets up an appointment, and you come and see me. And unless it is something that is on this list, and this is in writing, so you know this, unless it's in writing, unless it is something that you see in writing here, that is maintained as confidential. That is new policy that began at the beginning of this academic year. It is a most unusual policy, and I give full credit to the administration here, Dr. Johnson, Dr. Vogel, and Dean Smith, for allowing this to occur. Because we are a screening institution as well as a training institution. They have placed a great deal of trust in the counseling center that we maintain here, that we will follow this, that they have approved, and that you have before you. So I'll stop and let Dean Smith speak for a minute, and then we'll take questions. Sorry to take so long.
It's the policy of Concordia Seminary.
to encourage and allow every opportunity for men to grow personally, professionally, and theologically throughout their time at Concordia Seminary. That is why we provide counseling services at no cost to you and to your families. And that's really a very separate issue from certification, because most of the problems that you men have to deal with don't have anything to do with certification. They are simply personal problems, financial problems, family problems that everyone in the world has. We want you to come and to seek help in those areas. It is better for you to get those problems resolved before you get in the parish than to carry them with you into the parish and cause yourself further difficulty and possibly cause difficulty for the people that you serve. Therefore, we want to do everything we possibly can to assist you while you're here to grow in all areas. Now, when it comes to certification, the things that you see on that sheet that Dr. Barber handed out to you, criminal activity, abuse of another individual, verbal, physical, or sexual, imminent separation and divorce, a mental illness interferes with student functioning, strong suicidal thoughts, marital infidelity. We have all heard the nightmare stories from out in the church about men who have these problems and the horror it causes the people that they serve. As Dr. Barber alluded to, this is a screening institution. Let me share with you what this institution is charged with from the Synodical Handbook. A graduate of an authorized synodical institution must be declared qualified for a first call and recommended by the faculty of the respective synodical institution before the effective date of the first call to service in the church as assigned by the Board of Assignments. Candidates who may be declared qualified for first calls are those who, before the effective date of the first calls, will have satisfactorily completed the prescribed courses of studies and will have received diplomas from their respective institutions or have filled the requisites of a colloquy. In addition, they must have indicated complete dedication to the ministry and evidenced their readiness for service in the church. Finally, to be declared qualified and recommended by the faculties or colloquy committees for their specific types of service in the church, the appropriate faculty or colloquy committee must be satisfied that the individual will meet all personal, professional, and the theological requirements of those who hold the office of the ministry to which the individual aspires. The certification process works like this. And there's no easier way to say this than every aspect of your growth while you're here is observed. And I can't make it any easier. Your academic work is only part of it. The general feeling is make good grades and you're fine. But the fact is the assessments from your field education supervisor, all the reports from Vicarage, and how you conduct yourself on this campus is all a part of our observations of whether you are equipped and ready to be a pastor in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. You all have these concepts that somewhere on this campus there are hundreds of file cabinets with thick, thick files with every sin you have ever committed at this institute documented through memos. Gentlemen, we don't have that kind of time, okay? There are no such things. That is simply untrue. We have, and I believe that you know at the level that you are what is appropriate behavior and what isn't. If you err in that judgment, then we help you with that correction. But I can assure you that the men, and it is always unfortunate when it occurs, that have been asked to leave this seminary fall into these categories. It is of a very, very serious nature before we dismiss a man from this seminary. Now, the only thing that's not listed here is academic problems. We try to work with students as much as we can on that, but after 4 or 5 quarters, if your grade point average begins with a period, then we've got problems, okay? That doesn't leave us many options left, okay? Other than that, that's here. And that's about 1% or less a year. But I hope that you will understand that this seminary is not going to abdicate its responsibility to the church at large. That men that have these kind of problems are not going to be put into the office of the ministry. And I know at times that you get upset when such an action is taken, but I assure you that when it is taken, it has been thoroughly investigated and that we have no options. And I can assure you that in these situations, if we knew about it, if we knew about something on this list and we put a man into the ministry without telling anyone, and then the thing goes awry, we are liable. And I can assure you that if a man is involved in these kinds of activities and we tell a district president that, he's not going to place him. So it is better to just go ahead and tell the student, you can't be placed into the office of the ministry, you're wasting your time and your money, than it is to let him go 4 years to this institution and then say, you will never be placed. So I assure you that those actions sadden us all, but they have to be done because there is a concern here for the church at large. And we will not, as I said, abdicate that responsibility. As to certification, the fourth year class now is certified. It occurred in the April meeting. And it's simply this. If you do your work and act responsibly on this campus, as 99.9% of you do, certification simply occurs. And the kinds of things that Dr. Barber deals with mostly have nothing to do with your certification. If you're having problems with your wife, why are you having problems with your wife? Probably because you have your head in the books and haven't paid any attention to her in 3 weeks. That can be fixed. That doesn't impact your certification. Okay? They have to be very, very serious things of this kind of nature before they impact your certification. So, relax, okay? People are not out to get you. We need your money, okay? The fact is, we want you here. And we want you to be men who are growing in their spiritual lives, in their personal lives, theologically, throughout the time that you're here, so that you are that much better a pastor when you go out. So I'm gonna stop with that, and then we'll open it up for any questions that you have to either of us.
We're assigned advisors when we get here, which I have no idea.
a lot of that depends on who the advisor is. Many advisors take that task very seriously. Some do not. I would say that at this juncture, those advisors that don't take it very seriously, I never hear anything from. Anyway, we have looked at a number of options to revise that program. And it may be it may be something that is discussed more thoroughly in the curriculum review process because as part of faculty responsibility. But I am in the position that I do not pressure faculty members to meet a certain level. It is up to them individually to decide how they're going to handle that. But there is a disparity between how it's handled. I would admit that. But we are looking to improve that program. Students who are dismissed, it is a traumatic time, and we are aware of that. In many cases, if they are in our seminary housing, we do not pressure them to get out of that housing, and we do offer the services of Dr. Barber to see those students for a reasonable length of time. If they live away from the campus, the housing isn't a problem. In some cases, I will contact their home pastor if they are going home. Alert him that there has been a problem. I cannot tell him what it is. Otherwise, I violate the student's confidentiality. And you should know that if you had a problem here and your own mother and father called to find out what it was, I would not tell them. Because we will uphold your confidentiality. But we do direct them and try to make some provision for them if there is a problem. Okay. But technically, we have no jurisdiction over them once they leave the institution. So we can make suggestions. Usually also, you should know, in the case of dismissals, if there is a possibility for readmission, we tell them ahead of time, before they leave, and we tell them what would need to be done before they could be readmitted. Okay? So that is included, and it is only in the most extreme situations that there is no possibility for readmission. In most situations, even academic probation, students are given the opportunity after a certain amount of time to reapply to the institution. Nothing is grounds for immediate dismissal until we have investigated the situation and have all the facts, okay? We do not make arbitrary or hasty decisions. We have investigated the situations, and we have dealt with and talked to the students, okay, involved. Tell me what you did, and I'll tell you.
You want to?
suicide issue first. A person has strong suicidal thoughts when they have a plan. Because suicide tends to be a very impulsive thing. Some of you, I mean, you work on a long time, but if a student comes in and says, I'm feeling depressed or feeling suicidal, well, yeah, if you're going to kill yourself, how would you do it? If you're going to harm yourself accidentally or otherwise, that's the question. Well, I've got this 45, it's loaded, and it's under my pillow in the dorm. That is a real serious kind of thing. So he says, oh, I don't know. You know, someday I may go out and that guy's just feeling real bad. And when a person has a plan, that is strong suicidal thoughts. In terms of mental illness, everyone here experiences stress. That's a normal response. Mental illness would refer to a mental condition that works this way. When you respond, if you have stress to a lot of tests, that is a normal response to a normal situation. When you respond abnormally to a normal situation, for instance, if you're waiting for a voice to tell you the answers, and I'm not talking about the Holy Spirit, you know what I'm saying here? That is an illness that cannot easily be corrected. And that when we talk about mental illness, we're talking about neurosis that is of a very severe nature, obsessive-compulsive type behaviors that you can't function in society, much less here. Everything else we work very hard. We'll work very hard to fix that, but you can't continue in class. If you can look at someone and they're talking to the wall, that's what we're referring to.
Students are given every benefit of the doubt. If we believe that there is the opportunity, even with things on this list, there is some opportunity for that student to remain here and to continue his studies while we work on the problem, then he will be allowed to do so. But if it is of a serious enough nature that we believe that he simply cannot continue, he can't be in a field education church, he cannot be assigned a vicarage, then we go ahead and take the action and tell him you need to try to correct these things and you may reapply within or in about a year or maybe 2 years. There is stipulations and time given. Those are subjective judgments, but they are made by professionals who know what's going to happen out in the church, who have been there.
This test objectifies what I believe already to be true. When you're asked to take a test, some of you are asked to take this test. It has nothing to do with David Smith or anything like that. It's just helpful for us to have some additional information. But this test is an objective way. It is scored, and I score it, and you got this number, you look in the book, and you write this into the test. And that is why we give that test. Some people have this belief that we give the test to make a determination about where you are or how you stand. It's simply a support for what we already know. Yes. and sometimes we're curious about what's going on if you're in a normal counseling, meaning it's a voluntary counseling situation. It has been talked about. As a matter of fact, we're in a search for an individual that the Senate is supplying. Did I say that correctly? Who would do pre-admission testing, but they're not looking for personality characteristics because we know God uses all kinds of people to build his church. We're looking for people who are psychotic, have sociopaths, people that you would not necessarily pick up. But you've seen people walk across campus and think, oh my gosh, those are the kind of people that we're trying to. And everybody's going, oh, he's talking about me. No, I'm not. You don't know that for sure. But the testing business has more to do with screening out those types of things rather than specific personality characteristics that would make a good pastor. Oh, that'd be a nice test to have. One thing we're working on is staffing the counseling center in a way that doesn't cost us anything, but you'll still receive quality assistance. One way we have done that is Theresa Shultanis is assisting. She's the other half of the counseling center right now, and but she's here for another year or two. We're also working on. Four. Depending on how it goes for you. No, just kidding around. But by doing that, we are also seeking practicum students, people who are almost through their program, preferably doctoral students who already have a master's, or people who have almost finished their master's. But it's hard to find people for free. And the way it's working now is we have one additional person who's here for a very specific situation. And I provide supervision. I'm qualified to do supervision for two different agencies. And they will come and receive supervision and inform a payment of that. They will utilize so many of their professional hours of time to make up the difference. And they will agree to see students here for that. So we're bartering. We're on the barter system at this point, trying to get all the needs met. This gives us evening hours as well. Yes. Basically, the generic answer is yes, because if someone comes in and says, my husband assaults me physically or sexually, or he assaults the children, that information would not remain confidential. But it wouldn't in an agency either. I mean, that's the kind of thing that is here in general. Yes. In terms of certification, that doesn't have anything to do with your certification. In terms of providing the best help possible, that person may require hospitalization. And that would require that Dean Smith to have information about that. But those, if we can separate these two things out, the certification, if your wife has a mental illness of some kind, or let's just say she has, undesigning woman, OPD, obnoxious personality disorder? Yeah. I get that. I actually looked that up to see if it was a real thing. It's not. and I'm glad. But it doesn't matter what's going on with your wife. That is a separate issue. If you're dealing with it and working hard to do whatever you can to make your marriage as Christ-like as possible, that satisfies any requirements in terms of certification. There's another.
Yes, and that's possible, but I want you to know the danger of that is we will not build a system that will allow students to hear those kinds of things and not report them. Okay? Day-to-day issues, that's a possibility. Now, back to Ed's comment. This is also why the Dean of Students is on the placement committee. Because there are these situations with wives and families. If a wife needs continued counseling during a vicarage, we get them in a vicarage in a location where that can occur. So we do take into account your families, but that is not, as Dr. Barber said, it does not have anything to do with your certification. You are next. When you go to a professor for counseling other than Dr. Barber, then you should know that it will be up to the discretion of the professor about whether or not they relate that information to me as the Dean of Students. Now, I get lots of information from professors. If a man is having problems academically, I will check with his professors. If a man isn't coming to class repeatedly, usually the professor will contact me. But if you're going to them for advice and spiritual counsel, it's up to the professor what he relates to me. Therefore, if you're going to enter into that situation, it's up to you to discuss those matters with that professor. Okay? Charles? They would, but Mrs. Schnockstad does not tell me every time you cough. I don't want to know, okay? I don't want to know. But if she knows of something that she believes could be detrimental to a student, or a student who is really experiencing serious health problems, I, as the Dean of Student Life, who is the one responsible for student welfare, she will share that with me out of concern. Yes.
I'm glad you asked that question. The original purpose of the survey that went out was to develop a prevention program. And the administration gave me permission to do two things. One is to cut part of that time off to do preventive type programs, but instead to have these practicum students or someone like Teresa to come in and fill in the gap there. Since the survey was so late coming in, there wasn't any way. Hopefully, and I'll present this proposal again, we will have opportunity to have speakers come in on a regular basis, and the theory is like once a month on a Saturday morning or a more convenient time than maybe during a class day to discuss those issues and to learn how to deal with stress on an educational enrichment type basis as opposed to just a counseling basis. That won't help you fourth year guys, but at least you'll walk away from here knowing that something's going on. Yes. How to say no? We teach them pretty pathological things here sometimes about what to do with their time. It depends on who you're talking to at the moment. And there are those who will tell you that you're supposed to work 8 hours a week or you're just a bum of a pastor. And there are those like me who say if you work 8 hours a week, you're going to have a heart attack like most pastors do. So I encourage you. Does anyone know a pastor who's died a natural death? We got one over here. Hey, that's kind of sick, you know, where we kill ourselves. And we after you leave here, we want those alumni funds coming in for as long as it's possible to do so. Another question.
I appreciate that, and that's what we want to try to do. I only bite if provoked, okay? And I think you know how to do that, okay? But only when necessary. That is not my nature, but it is my job, okay? But I want you to know that Dr. Barber and I, our doors are open, and we want to assist in whatever way we can. And up to now, there's been a lot of misconception that to go see the dean or to go see Dr. Barber is the beginning of the end. Okay? That is simply not true. Okay? And many of you have been through counseling with Dr. Barber, and it has helped you. And that's all we're after. So, share that with your classmates so that they know that there's a lot of positive things. And that's what we want to happen through the counseling and testing program, is that men grow in their abilities to be pastors in the church. Jeff. It's been discussed for a long time. It's been debated for a long time. the same rules of confidentiality would apply to him as apply to Dr. Barber. That will never change. But the concept is, and I have had men talk to me about those things, there are not many professors, I believe, that have not seen and helped men through spiritual crisis. Parishioners go through them. Everybody goes through them. Even professors go through them. And I think that you can feel more comfortable than you think with going to a professor about that. Because I think that you will be met with pastoral care. There is no basis whatsoever, because a man is in a spiritual crisis, to conclude that he's not fit for the ministry. Because if we do that, then we toss out Moses, Elijah, Jeremiah, and the rest. Be trusting indeed that they understand those kinds of problems. I would say that Dr. Barber is available to see not only faculty but staff here on the campus, and has done so. And usually on the campus, there are close enough friendships between the faculty members that they do and can confide and talk to one another.